Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Literary journals offer aspiring writers a window into the process of professional publishing and immersion in the community of writers. They're a mainstay of MFA programs, as well as a number of graduate and postgraduate programs in the sciences. We wanted to know more about the creative lives of America's future healers after leafing through Lifelines. That's Dartmouth Medical School's arts journal. Jessica Schwinkowski is a third-year medical student on rotation at Dartmouth's West Coast Teaching Hospital presently. She's also editor-in-chief emeritus of Lifelines. That's the 2011-2012 edition is actually now online. It was released earlier this year. Jessica, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. Hi, Virginia.
Hi. Tell us about the origins of Lifelines. Was there a demand among med students for a place to express themselves differently?
There certainly was. So Lifelines originated out of a conversation that started with the Multicultural Office in 2002, and a student named Sai Lee, who is now a practicing psychiatrist in Michigan, basically came to Multicultural Office and said, you know, we really have a need to express ourselves creatively, and there's a lot of talent in the Upper Valley that we would love to showcase. And so that's how Lifelines started, and, you know, it's a completely student-run journal, and we solicit entries from the entire Upper Valley, including patients and doctors and students in training from our own school. And we unfortunately took a hiatus in 2008 for a couple of years because we lost funding. But the Dean's Office and Student Government and Alumni Council gracefully stepped in and helped us to fund this current issue that just came out.
I'm reading some of the titles of the submissions, Autoimmune, 2020 Surgery, and some wonderful images in the journal, photographs and computer graphs of hearts, including one cast from Silver. So, obviously, you get things from patients. Not all submissions are related to health and medicine, but that's part of the gist.
Certainly. You know, we basically set out with the idea that, you know, everything that comes into the journal should be loosely related to the experience of medicine in some way. And, you know, that could just be being a physician and this is what you do in your free time, or having been a survivor of cancer and you need to write and express about that experience. But I think that, you know, everything that's in here in some way speaks to the experience of medicine.
Let's hear a selection from Lifelines. This is the poem Science to Death by Kristen Brownson, if I'm pronouncing that right. This is read here by NHPR's, let's say, poet for a day, Rick Ganley.
Science to Death. I delivered your few imperceptible cells, injection of steroids, suction, mechanical breaths. Immature lungs bellowed a perceived victory cry. The nerve you have. I scrutinized you under high-power magnification, dissected each deranged contour of your form, stood vigil in a sterile vacuum while you embarked down the wrong path again and again and again. I published your profile to alert others of your ways. Amidst a dark backdrop, I detected you, promptly diffusing your radiolucent glimmer with my poisonous cocktail. Yet, at my zenith, you stole throughout the fragile vessel, erupting in victorious red from every orifice. As a white hush draped across translucent skin, I watched the soul escape and wondered, was the departure because of or in spite of me?
That's the poem Science to Death by Kristen Brownson. It's featured in Lifelines. And we're speaking with the editor of Lifelines, Jessica Schwinkowski. She's a third-year medical student and also the editor-in-chief emeritus of Dartmouth Medical Student Art Journal, and it's called Lifelines. Your editor, what did you see? What did you read when you read that poem?
You know, I think what really stuck out for me in that poem was that it was just so raw with experience, with, you know, interfacing with science and medicine and what that ultimately means. And I think, you know, I think that that speaks to not only a patient's perspective, but a student's and a doctor's perspective. And we get so used to the, you know, nitty-gritty of, you know, prognosis and diagnosis and X equals Y. And I think that it's, you know, really important for both doctors and patients to see the creative side of medicine. And what I like about this journal is that it allows people to see that. Because once you actually get into the practice of medicine, you have to deal with people's lives and all of those messy things. You actually have to become quite creative as a physician to practice good medicine.
Yeah, and the emotional lives and death, you know, the soul leaving the body there and wondering, you know, how am I responsible? It seems like a really interesting integration of, I don't know, emotionality and medicine.
It certainly is, and I think one of the things that struck me was that when we were receiving submissions, I got a number of submissions from physicians who basically said, you know, this is my outlet. This is what I do so that I can deal with what I have to see every day. And, you know, we do have a lot of discussions as physicians and physicians in training about how do you deal with the difficult things that you see every day, and we can't save everybody. And for most doctors that are perfectionists, it is a very difficult thing to lose patients or just to see patients suffering. And I think that, you know, writing or painting or whatever it is can offer a very therapeutic outlet for physicians and physicians in training. And then, of course, for patients that are experiencing that suffering and caregivers who are watching their loved ones die. And otherwise, you know, just a lot of people that are creative end up going into medicine, and it's difficult to leave behind that side of your life once you go into a very regimented way of practicing your life.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I'm thinking, you know, when I was reading this, perhaps of America's greatest example of the physician poet, William Carlos Williams.
Mm-hmm.
One of his biographers said he worked harder at being a writer than he did at being a physician, but he excelled at that as well. And I wonder if students ever feel that this all-consuming pursuit of medicine forces them to give up on the art. Is there room for both, Jessica?
You know, I think it's really hard. I do have a lot of classmates. One of the things that I was struck by when I started at Dartmouth was just how talented my classmates are. You know, I'm surrounded by these incredible people that have dedicated their lives to different things before coming to medicine. And I think it's really hard to find a balance, but it's really important. And that's something that Dartmouth does really well at emphasizing, is that it's important for you to have a life outside of medicine, and that you'll practice better medicine if you're a healthy if you're healthy spiritually, if that makes any sense. And so I think that it's difficult. You know, I spent a lot of time editing for this journal, but every time I was, you know, done spending that hour or two working on this, it made me feel better, and it was all for the better. And it's good to take a break.
Well, I wonder, having read your editor's letter in this edition, you were saying yourself, perhaps I was more naive than some of my classmates, less prepared for the volatile shifts between light and dark that we face as healers. Anyone who has had more than trivial contact with the medical world will know that it contains both deep joy and deep pain, hope, doubt, life, and death. Do you think medical schools are preparing their students to properly deal with these kind of emotional strains?
You know, I think that it's a tough thing. You can't teach dealing with the emotional difficulties of medicine and of the victories of curing patients and the losses of losing them. But I think you know, Dartmouth in particular is doing a very good job with a few programs. You know, we have a program called On Doctoring in our first 2 years, where we start to experience the clinic once a week, and then we come together as a small group and kind of discuss our feelings about that. And at the end of I'm currently on my medicine clerkship in San Francisco, and at the end of this, we'll actually come together for kind of a bereavement session, where we talk about losing our first patient, or, you know, what kinds of things we found difficult to work through during this process. And, you know, your colleagues are also very important and very supportive. You know, I remember the other day, one of my colleagues came in and she said, "I lost my first patient." We just took a few minutes to sit and talk and then go get some frozen yogurt. So, you know, I think it's something that's very hard to teach, but the community is very strong, and that helps a lot.
And we see that expression in the journal. Thank you so much for joining us, Jessica.